Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Two views on Operation Lucky Bag on the subways this morning.
I think they're deliberately putting it there to catch people, but then innocent people get caught up in it because, you know, you see a wallet, you want to help out, you want to take it and give it maybe to the police station or something, and then they think you want to steal the wallet. So I think it's kind of like entrapment. For me, I'll leave those wallets alone.
I think that's quite possible a way of identifying great heroes, people who would return it. Give them a better sense of how to recover lost property. I don't think on the face of it there's anything wrong with it. It could, of course, be abused and be a kind of entrapment thing, but I'd give them the benefit of the doubt.
Morning, David Cruz in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You may have read about this controversial NYPD program called Operation Lucky Bag. It's a decoy operation created ostensibly to grab up subway criminals and prevent theft. But as you might expect, the plan has its fair share of critics. Here to discuss the rationale behind the Lucky Bag operation is a spokesman for the NYPD, Paul Brown. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David.
So we're also going to hear from one man who says he was wrongly caught up in the operation. But first, we're going to talk to Paul Brown. Paul, tell us what Operation Lucky Bag is.
Okay. Well, first, I should start by saying crime in the subways, particularly violent crimes, at a historic low. Where we do have most of crimes in the subway, 60% are larcenies. That's where people report to us that they leave a bag of sign for a minute out of their sight and somebody swipes it. We've had those complaints mainly at some of the bigger transportation hubs in Manhattan, and that's where these operations, very few, there's over a million riders in the subway system, we're talking about 100 arrests a year. It's a very small operation, but targeted specifically at those locations where we've had the most complaints about larceny. What we do is have an undercover officer, man or woman, with their property, and they momentarily leave it. They'll get up from a bench and go to the edge of the platform to see, is there train coming? Because this is what victims have described to us, and then come back to the bench.
So specifically designed to be a brief period of unattended.
Yeah, absolutely brief, which nobody is reporting, or in the examples being given, they don't report that. I think the public's perception in these newspaper accounts is that the property is just abandoned there. That's not what's happening. There's a person very closely attached to it and momentarily leaves it, goes up to a newsstand, gets a paper, comes back, goes to the edge of the platform, comes back. And in the interim, the people who do this professionally are watching just for that moment. Is it possible that somebody who doesn't see that undercover officer, doesn't see that person leave it temporarily? Maybe. But just as many times as been taken, we've had Good Samaritans. This is not returning it to a lost and found. They go up to that undercover officer. They don't know it's a police officer. They say, sir or ma'am, you just left your bag behind, or you just left your wallet behind.
What areas are these that we're talking about now?
You mean the stations?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, this would be Grand Central, the shuttle area. West 4th Street is one where we've gotten a lot of complaints.
So is it based on it's based on areas where you've gotten complaints, is what you're saying?
Yeah, in other words, where the most larcenies of this nature have occurred.
All right, so then
there's also a uniformed officer on the platform in case, say, you know, the Good Samaritan doesn't see the officer getting up and doesn't notice the undercover leaving the property. There's another opportunity. You have a uniformed officer nearby. And in this case that was used in the news as an illustration, and which is not was reported, however, that uniformed officer approaches the person who touched the wallet and kind of bumps into them just to make sure they see the officer. Now, this person said he was too busy, so he elected not to return it or report it to that.
We're going to hear from him, Carlos Alayo, in just a little bit.
Right, okay, and maybe that's the case. And then there's a third opportunity. The officers then watch that person. Very often a perp will separate the money from the wallet or take the iPhone out of the bag. We're not abandoning an iPhone, like I think, or an iPod or a cell phone, as was reported in one case. It's in a bag, and some perps will take the whole bag and then try to separate the valuable property and leave the identification behind. Obviously, if that happens, there's no attempt to return it. And if people take cash out of the wallet, and tossed a wallet, obviously no attempt to return it. So in those instances where where somebody has not yet separated the valuables from the wallet, we do not make an arrest.
So you're making a distinction there between, it's sort of a timeline, right? I mean, if there's someone who has just picked up the bag, you're not assuming automatically that that person is going to be like someone else who may immediately go and separate the valuables from the bag. So there's a cop who's watching for that?
Yeah. You have two types of perps. I'm not saying the perps, though. Some will try to make off with the property and separate it later. Some will try to do that right away. But what I'm saying, we're giving the benefit of doubt even to those who may be planning to take the money later. If they don't do it within a relatively quickly while they're still in the subway, then the officers don't make an arrest. They'll stop and ask them a few questions and ask them, did they find this wallet? But they don't arrest the person if they haven't separated the cash from the ID.
David Cruz in for Brian Lehr on WNYC. We're talking about Operation Lucky Bag with our first guest, Paul Brown, who's the Deputy Commissioner for Public Information. We'll also hear from a criminologist and one man who was caught up in Operation Lucky Bag in just a few minutes. Paul, who are the victims generally of these larcenies? Is this are they mostly tourists or is it New Yorkers as well?
I'd say both. It's a mix. It's rush hour. Usually, I'd say rush hour victims. The perps in this case, they don't like an isolated station because if you're sitting there alone, you're going to notice somebody looking for a moment to take your property, even if you kind of walk away from it briefly. So they like an environment where it's crowded. They're going to strike quickly and then kind of disappear in the crowd. And those are at the bigger hubs and around rush hour. That tends to be when these larcenies are happening. And as I said, some of the major hubs everybody would recognize. And other ones, not as recognizable, but that are busy, West 4th Street and 79th and Broadway, for example.
The department says the program and its predecessor have been a success. What constitutes a success?
Well, I think you discourage and arrest people who are engaged in this process. We've seen a reduction about in half over the last year of grand larcenies on the subway system. Attributing that to a number of factors, including this, I wouldn't say it's exclusively Lucky Bag. But
so are you measuring it by the number of arrests or the number of people who actually get convicted of?
No, it would be by the number of complaints of larcenies by victims. In other words, the number of reported grand larcenies coming into the police has gone down.
Yeah. And what's the connection there between this operation and the number of reported larcenies being down?
Well, in other words, since this began, Lucky Bag began a year ago, the number of grand larcenies have come down.
So we're to assume that the news of the operation or
Well, we've arrested 100 people engaged in it, so that's going to have an impact.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, you're taking out of the subway system people who do this.
Who would be more inclined to do it, right?
Well, and who do it? I mean, 58 of the people had been arrested 440 times previously.
Yeah.
So
I want to talk a little bit about the differences between larceny and grand larceny.
Sure.
Someone swipes a wallet with less than $1,000, it's petty larceny,
correct,
right? And it's
right.
Maximum 1 year in jail and considered a misdemeanor.
Right.
But if you swipe a wallet or a handbag with a credit card, that ups the ante to grand larceny, which is a max 4 years and a Class E felony, right?
Right.
So the reports that I've seen on Operation Lucky Bag is that Operation Lucky Bag 2.0 is usually you've got credit cards
that's
in those
erroneous.
Bags.
That was erroneous.
You're saying that's incorrect.
The Daily News corrected today. That's just erroneous. There is no credit cards involved. It's typically between $10 and $20 or so. In the example the Daily News wrote about, it was $21.
So you're saying that the department specifically does not include credit cards?
Correct.
All right. So the idea is then that you guys accept the fact that these will be petty larcenies.
Well, yeah, there'll be petty larcenies. What we're trying to do is grab the people who engage in this, and many of those, you know, depending on what they've stolen in the past, it's going to include grand larceny. If you have an expensive laptop that they've grabbed, that person may have. We're finding people who have records for grand larcenies and worse, including somebody who was wanted out of state for the murder of a police officer. Those who, like I said, 58 of those arrested had responsible for 440 prior crimes, 441 prior
crimes.
It seems
like a fine line between someone who picks up a bag and someone who goes out to rob someone.
Except in this case, we're not arresting anyone who doesn't take the further step of separating the valuable property from the identification. You know, not only are they not looking to, they haven't done anything to notify anyone that they found it. It's not simply that. They've done something else. They've taken the cash out of the wallet and tossed the wallet away. So, you know, when they're arrested. So it's not really that fine a line. It's pretty clear. Not only did they not report it, but they went a second step to make sure they weren't found with any identification from the true owner, and they've made no attempt. They've gotten rid of that identification.
Yeah, comps that I've talked to have told me that operations like this and operations that target fare beaters and so on are also a way for the department to round up people with outstanding warrants.
Well, sometimes they'll find outstanding warrants. I mean, in other words, when the person who takes the property may in fact have outstanding warrants as well. I mean, that will often be the case. We've arrested people for relatively minor transgressions on the subway system, or stopped and found, there's a rule against going between cars, and sometimes thieves or people will use that technique to check out potential victims throughout a subway car. They'll go from car to car to do that. You know, obviously, are people moving from a broken down air conditioned car to an air conditioned, to one that's working, are not doing that, and we're not going to be stopping those people.
Right. So you're saying specifically that it's not a fishing expedition for people with outstanding warrants?
No. But it's true that sometimes when some people who are arrested for stealing property will have outstanding warrants, but it's not designed to just find people without standing.
Right. I wonder how much you can comment about Carlos Alayo, who was the freelance photographer whose situation was profiled in the Daily News yesterday.
Well, I think what I just said is the officers, after they observed, he did not see the officer leave the property behind. I'm told that he said the officer who a uniformed officer was there and brushed into him, but he was in a hurry, so he didn't report it. But in the end, the officers took that at face value. In other words, when they observed him, he had not separated the money from the wallet, and because he didn't take that further step, they didn't arrest him.
All right. Carlos Alayo, we'll be talking with him in our next segment, but I have just a minute or so left.
Sure.
Paul, if there's this sense that programs like this can serve as a disincentive for, like, immigrants who may be undocumented, or even someone who's had a criminal record in their past, from trying to do the right thing. Is that part of your consideration?
Well, that wasn't our experience. And about just as many times as we found somebody taking the property and overtly taking the money away and throwing the wallet away. In other words, as many times as we found thieves, we found people who instantly told that undercover officer, that decoy officer, hey, you left your bag, don't leave your bag here, or you left your wallet behind.
So you've seen cooperation, but you can't really put a number on the number of people who
I can. I can. In other words, we had 101 who took the property. We had 100 who took the property and clearly, you know, separated the money from the wallet, et cetera. And we had 98 who immediately told the decoy officers that they had left their property behind.
All right, we're going to take a break now. Paul Brown is the Deputy Commissioner for Public Information for the New York Police Department. Paul, thanks very much for taking the time to be
here. Sure, you're welcome. Bye then.
When we come back, we'll talk with a man who was swept up in Operation Lucky Bag. Stay tuned. David Cruz in for Brian Lehr on WNYC. We've been talking about Operation Lucky Bag, and we're going to go with someone who was very much a part of that. You've been reading Carlos Alayo's story in the Daily News. He's a freelance photographer who was arrested as part of Operation Lucky Bag last week at Grand Central. We can also take your calls on this. The number here is 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You can also leave comments on our website. We've already been getting a bunch of comments on the website. Go to the Brian Lehr page at WNYC.org. And in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with a professor of criminology to get some more information on this. But first, we welcome Carlos Alayo to the program. Carlos, welcome.
Yeah, how are you, sir?
Very good. Tell us what happened last week.
Well, just like pretty much like you're in the paper, I just got off the train on the 4 line going downtown to a meeting and got off the train on 42nd. I was in a rush to a meeting, which I was late for, and just sat down on the bench and I just looking through my bag just to make sure I had all my gear. Just glanced to my left and there was like a wallet right there on the bench. So just kind of curious why it was just laying there. Looked around, I didn't see anybody, just picked it up, walked to the middle of the platform because it was going to be closer to my exit.
So you didn't see a cop or anything?
Oh, no, I didn't see one. Until actually when I got up and I just walked to the middle of the platform and then I rushed into this cop that I don't know where he came out of nowhere. But
so the cop approached you is what you're saying?
Yeah, he just kind of bumped into me as I was just going out of, to the middle of the platform, and then my train came, and then I was going, trying to get on it, and then I was top of my shoulder, and it was an undercover cop that showed me his badge, and he asked me, where's the wallet? I'm like, oh, here it is, tried to get back on the train, and then he pulled me back out of the train, and he started asking me questions, like, do I have any weapons, any drugs, this and that.
What were you thinking?
I don't know what was going on at that point.
I mean,
point.
Did you make a connection between having picked up the wallet and now being confronted by a cop?
Well, I figured at that point, I was more worried about getting to my meeting that once I gave the officer the wallet, I was like, okay, well, I could go now. But then he stopped me, started asking me questions. I don't know what was going on. I don't know what they were doing this to people.
So the paper says that you claim that the officer was saying, just tell me now how many arrests you have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what really hurt me because I have no criminal record. And just to look in his face was just like he already knew that I had committed many crimes already. Like I was labeled as a criminal. So he asked me that question and that really hurt me.
Do you feel like after this incident, do you feel like the NYPD was protecting you as a New Yorker or do you feel like you were targeted in some way?
I felt like I was targeted at that point. I don't know why would they assume that I pickpocketed or I'm some sort of criminal just because I picked up a wallet on a bench.
Did you go through the wallet at all?
I quickly looked at it just to see if there's an ID because sometimes most people have an ID right in front, and I noticed there were some credit cards, but I didn't look if there was any cash. I just put it in my bag and I just kind of I was more
you didn't
worried
think
about
to check for money and say, no. Well, bonus.
No, I mean, I have picked up IDs on the street and mail it back to people. I find a bag like a year ago and I send it back to the person. Or actually, I meet up with the person and return the bag. So I have found things on the street or on the platform, and I returned it to the owner.
The NYPD says that we were just talking to a spokesperson from the NYPD, and he said that it's not a lot of time that the wallet or the handbag is left unattended. It's a matter of seconds or minutes. How long did you see that thing there before you picked it up?
Well, when I got off the train, it was right in front of the bench where I sat down, and it 3 steps to the bench, sat down, looked on my back, looked at the wallet, picked it up, and then walked to the middle of the platform. So I didn't notice anybody leaving the wallet behind. You know, I walked away from it. It was just there when I sat down on the bench. So I don't know how long it was placed on that bench. You know, I got out of the train and just immediately I sat down, basically, you know.
What would you say to someone who finds a wallet or sees a wallet there or a handbag? Would you recommend that they pick it up and...
Well, after what I've been through, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where the see something, say something deal is going to work now. You know, I don't know if people are going to say anything if they see a bag on the street or, you know, I lost things in the past and, you know, I never got it back, so... I tried to do the right thing, so this is what happened.
What are you going to do next time you see a wallet or a handbag?
Well, I'll look around first, I guess, if I, you know, I don't know, to tell you the truth, I don't know. I don't want to go through the same experience again, but I guess I'll try to help, but...
In the end, we should say that you weren't arrested, correct?
No, I was not arrested. I was detained, I was questioned, and they checked my ID, and they checked my background. I had no criminal record, so they had to let me go. And I say, I think because people are telling me because I didn't take the money out of the wallet, like they didn't have any, you know, I think that's what they were waiting for me to do, which I didn't do that. I just put it in my bag. You know, I was home going to business. So.
And then when the cops left, what did they say to you? How did that end up?
Well, they wrote down my information on their...
All right. Let me have to leave it there. Carlos Alayo is a freelance photographer who was swept up as a... part of Operation Lucky Bag yesterday. Carlos, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us.
Sure, no problem.
When we come back, we'll talk with Eugene O'Donnell's professor of criminology at John Jay College. Stay tuned. Eugene O'Donnell is a professor of criminology at John Jay College. He joins us now to hopefully give us some insight into how this all works and what it actually means. And we'll take some of your calls on this issue in just a minute. The number here is 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You can also leave comments on our website. Go to the Brian Lehrer page at WNYC.org. Eugene O'Donnell, welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you.
So I guess we can start by, I guess the big charge here is that this is somehow entrapment. Is this entrapment?
Well, it's right at the line, obviously. Entrapment, merely giving somebody a chance to commit a crime is usually not thought to be entrapment. But when law enforcement is playing some more active role in inducing people, encouraging people, to commit a crime, then the concern is that they may have then stepped over that line of entrapment.
He says, Paul Brown says, the NYPD says, that it's worked, that a program like this prevents crime.
Well, the history of this, a short history of this, is that when I joined the NYPD in the 1980s, crime didn't matter at all. You could be a police captain and you know, preside over a precinct or a district in the transit system where crime was through the roof and you didn't have to account for anything. We've now seen over the years a sea change to perhaps the opposite place where a crime is counted on a daily basis, it's looked at with great focus, and there's an expectation now that the police can do things about crime, and I'm not sure that's always a valid expectation. There's always this expectation now with the CompStat process that if there's a crime, there should be a solution. Thus, you have these kinds of ideas to run operations like this, and also the whole stop and frisk thing is often one of the things that's driving those larger numbers is the idea if there's a robbery or a larceny problem or a grand larceny problem, that there has to be a solution, and that's a dubious proposition.
And the expectation is not only on the part of police, but it's also on the part of the public, right? We want to see the crime rate continue to go down.
Right. And the NYPD, which has driven crime has gone down to record levels. It's debatable to what extent the police are responsible for that. But crime is where it is. And the police department is trying to drive crime even lower. And the question, I suppose, at this point is whether, you know, whether this is overreaching and whether they're manufacturing new crimes and whether they're getting the kinds of people that they say they want to get. It sounds like they're describing one person is honest for every person that's dishonest in this operation, which should be cause for great concern for those of us who live in the city. I didn't think that we were, I didn't think that people were quite that dishonest. This smacks more of kind of like an integrity test than a law enforcement operation, sort of a test to see how honest people are. Interestingly, the history also is that this started in the police world many years ago. Wallets would be dropped in and around police stations to see if the cops would return them. Quite a number of the cops did do it. They then turned around and the union did their own integrity test on New Yorkers and found New Yorkers to be less honest. But at that time, the cops were quite miffed at the idea that they'd be on the receiving end of an integrity test.
So this Operation Lucky Bag, is it really an extension of this whole theory of the broken window?
Yeah, because the ends are driving it. The means seem to be less of a concern than the ends. And so you get a person with a warrant, so you get a person with a criminal record. So what? The way you get him may be problematic or unnecessarily bring that person into a criminal realm. So what? Regular people might also end up being criminalized with this process. The idea is that at the end you have statistics and you have numbers and you have results, and you can say that somebody was wanted somewhere. And again, that should be cause for concern. It is a kind of a pleasant surprise, if there's any silver lining here. This is sort of the policing you see done in, you know, in wealthy, well-to-do suburban areas with not a lot of crime. So maybe that's the only silver lining here, that New York is so safe at this point.
We should probably explain to people what the broken window theory is.
Sure. The idea behind the broken windows theory is that if you address minor concerns such as graffiti, such as in the subway context, people not paying their fare to get on the subway, that if you take every little criminal and violation offense and seriously, that reduces serious crime. In the subway, for example, it was argued that people that were going to do serious robbery, serious crimes, weren't paying their fare. They would simply vault the turnstile, and that if you stood at the front of the system, as it were, at the turnstile and arrested those people, they would then be deterred from doing more serious crime. So this is sort of an outgrowth, trying to send out a message particularly to the bad guys. The police are out there, the police are about, and they're looking for every kind of serious and not-so-serious offense.
All right. David Cruz in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're talking with Eugene O'Donnell, professor of criminology at John Jay College, about Operation Lucky Bag. We'll take some of your calls on this now. The number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Let's have Derek from Manhattan join us. Derek, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call. I had a lucky bag situation where the police officers on the street, the cop on the beat, refused to take the report, then sent me to the precinct. The precinct refused to take the report, and I had to find my way to the transit police precinct to give a report, and then they refused to count it as stolen. They counted it as lost.
Well, very insightful comment, if you don't mind me saying. I wonder, I think most of the time when people have property taken in the subway, that's probably reported as a lost property for the purposes of Comstat and statistics, and not as a larceny. This is also one of the concerns about these operations. I suspect that when people are apprehended in these cases, they're clearly not classifying them as lost property. They're clearly classifying them as larceny. So if you're looking at the numbers game of this, every time you make an arrest here, you have a larceny that you're clearing. It's very hard to arrest people and make quality arrests for larcenies in the subway. This is one easy way to do it, even if the cases are somewhat weak and questionable.
Derek, are you less inclined then to see a bag and pick it up and bring it to someone?
Negative. I'm a citizen, well trained in the betterment of society. I've been a witness for murder cases. I've stopped stabbing perpetrators from gaining access to the subway till the cops came. I mean, I'm a true citizen.
So it's not going to stop you.
Bottom line, the cops are playing this game about, and it's right on the target. This Comstat thing. they refuse to take reports about crime to keep their numbers low until they figure they got their lucky bag, that is, a guaranteed clear of a case. Then they'll call it a crime, even if it's technically not.
Could I just say the cops are not necessarily...
All right, Derek, thanks for your call.
Welcome.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can I just say it's not the cops that have these ideas. It's, you know, it's often above them. And the other concern that you have when you have these operations is that the cops are sort of under pressure to come up with particular kinds of narratives, to have a story that, you know, about people opening wallets and taking the money out. So there's some real integrity and ethics questions about the pressures that cops should be under in these kinds of operations.
All right, well, let's hear from a cop himself. Howard is in the Bronx. Howard, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I don't know about the transit stuff. I know about stuff that was done above ground. They tend to be targeted. It's not the greatest thing on the planet, lucky bags, but they tend to be targeted, and the way we used to run them was you would have somebody actually there with an open bag, like a woman or somebody with a bag opened. You know, as for the Comstat game, lucky bags go back, you know, before Comstat, you know, and often what you do is dependent on the situation. If you have someone who knows what they're doing, who's experienced, they'll see somebody who is, you know, looking to do, go into another woman's bag, you know, do a bag dip, or they're looking to do a jostling.
Howard, what do cops feel about programs like that? Are cops less inclined to want to deal with that kind of, for the most part, petty crime as opposed to, say, going after larger criminals?
Well, the problem is, you know, you're coming in with 500 homicides, and it all depends where you are. And, you know, if you are someone and you come to the city from, say, Kansas, and somebody takes your wallet that contains your money, your credit card, your ID, your airline tickets,
right,
it's not petty to you.
Right.
You know, it's kind of, you know, it's like golf. You play the ball where it lies. If the bodies are falling in Brooklyn North, well, then it's easy to look for a gun collar or a homicide or something like that. But if, you know, if it's bags getting grabbed in Manhattan, well, you know, that's what you got to deal with.
All right, Howard, appreciate your call. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and just the other comment, you know, people ain't afraid to take reports. Sometimes it's laziness and stupidity, but, you know, it's not like the other guy was saying, and guys are just looking for their lucky bag. You know, it's not like he had lost or something was stolen from him. And the simple reality is there aren't that many pickpockets out there. Most people, when there's something gone from their you know, their wallet's gone or whatever, it's often because it just fell.
So you're saying, Howard, to people, if your first inclination is to be a good citizen, go with that, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the other guy was complaining about, you know, something was stolen from him.
Right.
And then he said the cops wouldn't report it right, wouldn't take it, this and that. You know, the odds are you lose something as opposed to, you know, doing it. Professional pickpockets are few and far between.
All right. Howard, thanks very much for your call. Gene, your reaction to that?
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's why these things have to be done with great precision. You know, undercover stuff shouldn't be done lightly, and the idea that it sounded like they were describing out of 200 incidents that 100 people were dishonestly willing to take property, criminally willing to do it, and that's a real concern. Might I add also the DA's offices should be involved with these things, and sometimes they're the silent partner in allowing this to go on without the scrutiny it should get. They sometimes write these cases up.
Yeah.
The DAs are the chief law enforcement people, and they should be on top of this.
All right, it's a good point. Let me get one more call in here. Laurie is in Rockland County. Laurie, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. I have about 30 seconds.
Okay, I'm an English teacher, and we were actually reading about Operation Lucky Bag in my class in seventh grade yesterday. We were reading a story by Jim Dwyer in the New York Times from last week. And what was interesting was a lot of the kids, their first reaction was, well, if I found a bag like that, I would want to be the one to return the bag. Even if I saw a policeman, how do I know that he's not just going to put the wallet in his pocket?
Hmm.
How do I know? I want to go home and find out who it belongs to and return it myself. I thought it was interesting that the kids felt that way.
Good point, Laurie. Thanks very much for your call. Gene, critics have said this is another example of profiling. Is this profiling?
Well, I think the concern is that the feeling that you can kind of spot a person. I think your guest there talked about being arrested. There's a concern that the police feel sometimes that they have some sixth sense about who did a crime and who's the good guys and the bad guys.
And there's that fine line where it becomes racial profiling.
Yeah, you have to be very, very careful with that. Of course, in these kind of cases, you might be surprised to find quite a representative sample of people being arrested with these kinds of operations, because it sounds like just about anybody possibly might end up at least picking up one of these items and perhaps being at least detained. So this might actually in the middle of the city, this might be a very representative sample of the city's populace.
All right. Eugene O'Donnell is a professor of criminology at John Jay College. Thanks very much, Eugene, for being part of the program.
Thanks, David.
David Cruz for Brian Lehr on WNYC. When we come back, an audit that might actually do you some good. Stay tuned.